Rah-rah, go Flicky!
Yeah. Rah-rah, go me.
We are Flickerbrack. Your opinion is irrelevant.
This is Darren Blake, and this is another episode of Flickerbrack Unscripted. This time, actually living up to its name, because I wrote no notes for tonight. Hee-hee. All right. I'm going to just dive right into it, because that's what I'm going to do. We have a bunch of people here on the phone with us, ready to wrap up the NaNoWriMo season for us. Although, before I do this, I do want to point out that this episode, when I first scheduled it, was scheduled for last week. And then someone sent me an email asking if I could postpone it because they were not going to be able to make it. And this was someone that I particularly wanted at the episode tonight, and you will understand why shortly. So I postponed it for the 12th, forgot to send out another invitation round, reminding people that, oops, I rescheduled it. So anybody who actually showed up for this on the 5th, I'm really sorry. I totally flaked. I had made a mention of it on the Plurk and Twitter threads, but I didn't actually send out the invite reminders until this afternoon. So, again, I'm sorry if you were here last week. Yes, as Finney says, I fail. November was National Novel Writing Month, as everyone should know by now, and our mission was to write a 50,000-word novel in only 30 days, and many of us here in this room tried, and many of us in this room succeeded, and a couple people didn't quite reach the mark. So we are going to randomly unmute everybody, pretty much, with the exception of Lorawan and Dev. We're going to say hello to Mr. Denizen, hailing from somewhere in Georgia. We're going to say hello to Miss Samantha, hailing from outside Chicago. We're going to say hello to Infinity Nevermore, hailing from Maryland. Boo, hiss, I mean, yay, Finny. We're going to, wow, I lost my train of thought. What a surprise. We're going to unmute Terry, hailing from, Idaho, and Mr. Wendigo, hailing from Squirrel Cookie Mountain, Pennsylvania. Hello, peeps.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay.
Phew. Good evening.
And if Lorawan or Dev would like to speak to us, all they have to do is hit request to talk, and I will include them in the conversation. If you are on the phone and not in the chat room, star 8 will do that for you. All right, so, peeps. Our quest was 50,000 words. Who made it?
I did.
Yay, Finny. Okay, I have all of you on my buddy list, but I'm too lazy to actually go look you up, so I think Terry just said she did. I think Samantha did.
I did. Yeah.
You did? Woohoo! I did. Mr. Wendigo, did you make it?
No.
Oh, it makes me cry. In a very sad
Honestly,
way.
I sat down and wrote for 2 days. That was it.
That was it?
That was it.
Dude, you didn't even try.
I know. I was just like, I can't. I got so much other crap going on right now. Madness. I'll get into that later.
Okay. And then one more person I need to hear from. Mr. Denizen of Rock. Your word count at the end of the month read 0. Explain yourself, Mr. Denizen.
The word count on the website reads 0 for the simple fact that I never uploaded any sort of story to the website, so it doesn't know I've been doing some writing. I have the actual document in front of me, and I can tell you that the actual word count is... Okay, here we go. Word count is 1,628.
Okay, we don't hate you then. Because at least you wrote something.
I did write something. Yeah. Turned out November, at least this November, just was not a very good year for me. Not a very good month to write a novel for two main reasons. The primary reason for that being that my family and I are currently building our new house. It's hardcore under construction. Most of the upstairs is done. The downstairs we're starting to work on, and that has eaten up quite a chunk of my time, what with helping Dad put up wall boards and ceiling boards and with myself running insulation, and I'm going to be painting my bedroom pretty soon. Anyway, that ate up a big chunk of my time. There's also the job that I work at and certain things like that, but just really wasn't a lot of time to actually sit down and write, although grateful that I was finally actually able to bloody write something. At least I got it started, and for that I am quite thankful. I have something to start with. I will continue to work on it throughout next year, because, I mean, I've been wanting to get this thing started for quite some time, and I'm glad I finally did. But I'll be able to do some work on it within the coming year, which I'm thankful for. And I'll stop talking now.
You are so fired.
I didn't want this job anyway.
All I heard in there was, excuse, excuse, excuse. Terry, what did you have going on in November that you still won?
I moved, and then I got sick, and my back went out, and I still made it.
Okay, so excuse, 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 but Terry still made it.
Yeah, I understand.
Oh, don't even go there.
Oh, that's right.
There,
and we got another puppy. I had one in already, but then we got his brother, so I had two puppies to deal with.
Oh, now you're just rubbing it in.
I almost didn't finish. I have to admit that, because I got really depressed at the end of the month, and it was hard to write. But I did finish.
Yes. And this is good. Let's see. I want to hear from Mr. Wendigo. I want to hear your excuse, 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 and Terry still made it.
Let's see. How did November begin? I had the first, I believe, was Sunday.
Yes.
I was like, yes, I'm going to write, I'm going to write, I'm going to write, I'm going to write. And I think we went out and about and did all kinds of crazy stuff. And I didn't write. I was like, okay, I'm going to write tomorrow. I've got the day off from work. I'm going to write. It's going to rock. So Yodi went to bed. Actually started writing. Got about 1,000 words. Or no, it's about 2,000 words. It's like, all right, good start. Good start for day one. Not bad. We're okay. Day two. Hooray. I don't have to work. Yay. So I got up. I said, bye, Yodi. Have fun at work. She slapped me and said, I hate you. And I went back to bed. I got up 4 hours later, and I wrote, and I got up to 8,000 words. I was like, yes, yes, we're on a roll. I was hoping to get around 10,000, but you do what you can. And then the next couple of nights, I looked at the words I was writing, and I just didn't like what I saw at all. It's like, the sequel thing, it's not panning out like I hoped to. Oh, and I had loads of inspiration throughout my workday. I'm like, oh, this would be a really great scene. You know, where the giant were-gecko eats the waiter. I actually got that scene down. The waiter's name was Reese, so they had to pick up Reese's Pieces.
Yep. Nope!
Yep.
nice.
Like, oh, and they're throwing some love scenes for some padding. You know, maybe if I'm lucky, someone might read them on his posterous thing, Mr. Squidward. Nothing like were-gecko scrumping. Now, there's all these crazy scenes in my head, and then I get home, and it's not right. Plus, little Yodi and I are trying to start our own business together, which is pretty tricksy. If you go to hexgex.com, you'll see the beginning of it. Essentially, we're going to be breeding and selling fancy geckos that were thought to have been extinct for 100 years, and were discovered recently in 1994. Yeah, so that's my excuse. It's not very good. I didn't move. I didn't, you know, I don't know.
Excuse, 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 and Terry still made it.
I know. And those of you that got it, congratulations. You all rock. Yes, the rare gecko excuse. Thank you, Rachel. yes, I'd like to blame all the geckos in my house and all the other animals of, you know, let's go, it's Sunday, I have to write. No, I have to spend 2 hours rotating snakes through different enclosures and feeding them frozen rodents. And then put them back in their enclosures and make note of who didn't eat and then try and feed them 3 days later. And then, yeah, sort of crazy. Sexing them is actually fun. I can get into that later at some point on another show. Probably my own. Which I've been bugged, by the way. I've been bugged to bring that sucker back.
Yes, I often bug you to yeah. bring it back.
I know. I know. You believe it. And I was amazed. You're not the only one.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. Someone that doesn't even go to talk show is like, when is your show coming back? I'm like, why? Well, I listen to it. Why? Because you're funny. Oh, dear.
Because we like you.
Oh, Back on track. Those of you that won, you kicked butt. You can bleep this out. You really kicked ass. I am very proud. And next year, God's willing, I will be back in the winner's circle. So I'm down, but not out. Sorry to see it.
That's good to hear. And I just find it amusing that you're trying to start a car insurance business with a theme that another car insurance company already has.
No, it's not a car insurance.
I know. I'm kidding.
Besides, that gecko is of the Felsuma genus. We're selling Rachodactylus's. Yeah.
I always thought he was just a computer animated gecko.
Oh, yeah. He's based on actually a day gecko. That's D-A-Y gecko.
Okay.
Not a fabulously happy gecko. Living off.
All I know is he keeps offering to bring popcorn, and I'm just like, I don't want no popcorn from you. No.
Actually had gecko for a while. And they're not bad. They're just a little lax on the whole. Oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to cancel your insurance. Here's your notification. Please pay us. They're really bad about mailing. So it's really nice getting letters from, the Department of Transportation. We have notification that you're now uninsured. You must surrender your license plate. Whoa. Hang on. Let me call him.
All right. So, Samantha made it, and she had a hard time making it, and I'm not going to press her for any personal details, but the rest of the month, how did that go for you, Samantha?
The first couple weeks, I was actually a little bit ahead of the goal every day.
Uh-huh.
Then I just got stuff started happening, so I didn't, have time. My computer was acting up.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kept trying to fix the computer and not writing, so I got behind a little bit. And then I started catching up, and then I just started getting depressed because I knew the time was coming.
Mm.
And so it became hard, but I ended up making it, but I wasn't sure if I was going to get the last, 5,000 words or not.
Well, we are very glad that you did, because that makes you a winner.
Yeah.
And speaking of winners who really aren't, though, Finny.
Shut up.
No, actually, I'm interested in hearing specifically from you, because if I'm remembering correctly, last year you were not gainfully employed full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And this year you were. So how did that affect your NaNoWriMo?
Just almost sunk it, to be honest, because it's very different getting up whenever you feel like it and, banging out 5,000 words and then getting up, going to work for 8 hours and coming home dead tired. Very, very different. And I stayed ahead for about the first few days, and then I started falling behind because I had less time to write, because not only was I working, but November is a busy month, period, just because there's a whole bunch going on, getting ready for Thanksgiving, parties and whatever. So I was falling behind. At about two major points, I was just about to just toss it in. But then it was a combination of things that brought me back. For one, there was the one pep talk from Chris that said, even if you only get about 500 words done in a day, just keep writing. And I was like, hey, You're right. So I think I wrote about 1,500 that day and
cool.
went to bed. And at another point, I talked to another one of my friends, and she had fallen behind. And she'd fallen behind severely. And I was saying, you know, even now, you can still write something and consider yourself a winner. And then I realized I was being extremely hypocritical because I hadn't written anything myself. So at that point, I just kind of picked myself up, dusted myself off, and said, well, I might not make my 60K goal, but I'm going to do my 50K.
Cool.
And I managed to do it.
Rock on. I know that for a while, because I was particularly tracking your progress because of the last
mm-hmm.
Unscripted where I basically challenged you to a duel.
Mm-hmm.
And although you never officially accepted the duel, I was still going under the, I don't want to use the word assumption, but I was accepting as reality we were in direct competition. So I was tracking your progress very closely. And I noticed
okay.
that for a long, long time, I had double your word count. And I kept going,
I know.
That is going to be my ultimate goal, to end up with double whatever Finney gets.
So, how did you do with that, by the way?
Well, I didn't quite manage to double yours because you made 56,000? No?
I did 50,716. I think that was my final word count.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Even though I was working very close to that, but I think I almost had that, and then some child shut down my computer. So, yeah.
Oh, smack the child.
I would, but I think I would die. So the child is not allowed on this floor anymore.
Good.
So
I was aiming for double your word count in the last full week of November. I kind of took a vacation, and I was kind of vacationing with someone that was determined not to let me write at all, but she actually was very gracious in many ways, where if I actually said, I need to write, she would leave me alone for a few minutes. And I do remember a car trip where she was completely silent the entire time, and I was writing the entire time. And I ended up with, like, almost 2,000 words that day, and that was cool.
Awesome.
Ultimately, I ended up with... Oh, goodness, Gorshin. I had this number memorized. It was 90,600 and something.
Impressive.
Well, I was...
That's awesome.
I was pretty impressed. I
90,695. Very impressive.
Okay. I wasn't positive what the last two numbers were. My goal, actually, beyond just your doubling your count, my goal was actually 100,000, and I had gone on my vacation with 75,000 words under my belt, because I knew I probably wasn't going to write as much on vacation, because I was at almost a 3,500 word a day pace, and I knew that there was going to be no way that I could continue to write 3,500 words a day on my vacation. So I ended up with, I broke my back trying to get 75,000 before I left, so that I would only have to write like 2,500 a day while on vacation and still be able to make my goal. And it didn't quite work out that way, but I did write every day, and seriously, 90,000 is nothing to sneeze at, so I do not feel ashamed at all. I are a winner.
You certainly are. How in the heck do you write 3,500 a day, though?
I sit down and write. It is true. Laura Wan said that it's hard to write while pounding the pavement and exploring Disneyland. Spending a lot of time at Disneyland didn't really help my word count any, but I think it might actually have been after Disneyland. We were both so tired that you didn't feel like disturbing me when I was trying to write. And in the Austin Houston Lushquin versus Maryland challenge, the Lushquins were the victorious ones. Sorry to say that, Finney. Actually, I'm not sorry to say that. And the part that really made me go hee 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 was that you remember that Tide Waterbound had been the coordinator for Maryland for the last few years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, at one point in one of the trash talk threads, she basically called me out and said, even if I don't do anything else, I am definitely going to top your word count, Flicky. And I went, yeah, good luck with that. And I even got a better word count than she did. Hee hee.
Congratulations.
Because she was used to me not being very motivated. And this year, I was motivated.
Yeah, I can see you definitely were.
All right, question for the peeps. I don't know if any of you have revealed your ultimate final word count other than Mr. Denizen, but anyone who wants to share their final word count, feel free. I'm talking about participants, Laura Wan.
50,716, even though I'm technically not done my novel and plan to continue.
Yeah, mine's not done either.
I made it to 60,203.
Cool.
Mine, when I did the verifying thing, was 51,605.
Nice.
And I'm not done yet either, because I'm still playing The Neighborhood.
And Wendigo typed that he did about 8,000. Blah, blah. I can talk. About 8,000. It's not 50K or more, so it doesn't matter. I think it still matters. Mr. Wendigo.
Well, Mary's not here, and it looks like she's won as well.
Yes, Mary won also. Purple Stars 2006.
Yeah.
She won as well.
And, yeah, I think I saw that, too.
Yeah. She verified at 50,113 words.
TC won by 16 words.
One of the people...
He got 50,016.
That's cool. One of the people in Maryland, actually, when she was uploading her final word count, ended up with like 69,993. So she wrote, seven more words equals seven. No. Yeah, seven more. It was 76,993. And she wrote, seven more words equals 77,000. So she ended up with an even 77,000. I thought that was kind of cool. Now, the next question, this is particularly directed at you winners, but even you non-winning winners can answer this. Are you pleased with what you wrote? Specifically, quantity, but even, like, quality, just the fact that you wrote, or the story that you came up with. Are you pleased with any of that, or all of that?
This year I am.
Say again, Samantha?
We need a list of responses.
For the most part.
Okay, what specifically are you pleased with, and what specifically are you not?
Now, the way I wrote it is I kind of wrote all over the place, and I wish I would have just gone kind of in order a bit, because I'm not sure how I'm going to end up posting it without having to write more.
Okay.
Since my story ended up not being what I'd originally planned, it ended up actually being the story of my Prosperity neighborhood. And because I already had 3 weeks of play for the families, each family under that I'd already played, I kind of skipped around, and I even started writing past where I've played.
Ooh, so, that's fun.
Yeah, I know. I have to try to get them to do what I want them to do now. So and I want to start posting on my blog, but I haven't even finished writing the first week for the first family yet because I jumped around so much. I'm almost done with that first week for that first family, but I'm not quite finished yet because I kept, like, skipping to a different part and, like, going to a different week. And so my writing was just all over the place.
Okay, so what you're not pleased with is that you wished you had written more linearly?
Yes.
Okay. But other than that, you were pretty much pleased with NaNoWriMo 2009?
Yeah.
Awesome. Are you coming back for 2010?
Yes.
Ha.
And I'm going to try for 2010. For it not to be a Sims-related story.
Okay. Is there a particular reason for that?
My last two have been Sims-related, where it's been from my playing The Sims rather than just a story, and I want to try something different.
Sounds fair enough. And Miss Terry, you had also started to say something.
Yeah, this year I found it to be easier to write. I think I liked the story that I was working on this time a lot more than last year's. So some parts of it just flowed a whole lot easier.
Okay. So, on the whole, you are satisfied with Nano 2.9? Yeah, that's good. Nano 09.
Oh, yeah.
And will you be back for Nano 10?
Of course.
Cool.
I almost wasn't going to do it this year because of the move.
Yeah.
But when it all came down, I was getting the emails from the site, and it was like, oh, I want to do Nano. So I decided, well, I can do it. So I did. And this year I also kept with my tradition of winning NaNoWriMo on Thanksgiving, because I tend to basically just devote the whole day to writing. So I won on Thanksgiving again this year.
Cool.
And but the last day of NaNoWriMo, I just got a bug to write, and I kept writing, and I wanted to see myself get over the 60,000, and I did. Actually, when to go? My husband cooks most of the Thanksgiving meal.
Oh.
He prefers to cook it.
I was going to ask that. I was actually going to ask that, but I was like, no, that's an invasive question.
Don't ever tell that to my wife.
It has nothing to do with my ability to cook. We both are great at that. It's just he loves doing the Thanksgiving thing, and I'd rather just, I'm like, fine, go for it. You do it. And so he does. And so that leaves me the whole day to kind of do nothing. So even though we host the Thanksgiving party here, my family doesn't care that I'm behind my laptop just pounding away at the keys.
Awesomeness.
You're lucky, Terry. I had to cook two Thanksgiving dinners this year.
Oh, wow.
Because we cooked one that we took over to my father-in-law's, and we had a plate with him over there, and that was actually going to be Thanksgiving, but we were going to cook over there. But, yeah, there was no way I could cook in his kitchen. So we ended up coming home, and we did our Thanksgiving on Friday. So I cooked our normal Thanksgiving meal on Friday. And then on Friday night, Saturday morning, I cooked the Thanksgiving meal that I'd originally planned for TC's father, and we took that over on Saturday. So I did two Thanksgiving meals.
Yikes. Okay, who else has a comment about how satisfied they are with Nano 09?
I do.
Okay.
I'm actually really surprised with how I enjoyed my novel. It was really hard until I got it to about the 20,000 word mark, and then it just kind of flowed the straight way on through. And I was amazed with, you know, every once in a while reading back over what I'd written, I couldn't believe I'd actually written it. And I'm actually extremely, extremely pleased. I'm actually going to, like I said, because of this, I'm actually going to finish. I might revise it, and who knows, I might actually look into trying to get it published.
Ooh, nice. So are you coming back for next year's NaNoWriMo?
Heck yeah.
Are we going to be in direct competition again? You going to kick my butt this time?
We'll see. At this point, next year's goal is to make actually this year's goal. See if I can actually write 60,000, you know, while holding down a full-time job and everything. If I could make 50K, let's see if I can do 60.
Cool. You know, I honestly, I have never done NaNoWriMo without having a full-time job. I've been with the state government for the last 8 years, and I started NaNoWriMo. This would have been my sixth year, actually, if I hadn't taken last year off. So when people talk about how, I'm going to try not to get too terribly personal here, but when I was reading your various things about how you were struggling because of the job, I was going, really? Because I don't have that frame of reference of not having a full-time job.
Well, right. I mean, when I started, honestly, the first year I started, I did not know I was not going to have a job during November.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea. I actually found out 2 days before NaNoWriMo began that I was going to be off for at least the first week, and it turned into the whole month.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah. So, you know, I sat in my room, tried to make myself useful around the house, eat as little as possible, and just banged away at the keys. And, you know, having that leisurely pace of pretty much having all day to put out 2,000 words, it's kind of hard when you realize now that you have to condense all day into 8 hours, maybe six, if you get home late. So.
Yeah. It can be a challenge. I mean, because granted, I don't have the problem that a lot of people have where they have kids or pets or a spouse that they primarily take care of and, you know, all that other stuff that normal people seem to do. Because I don't tend to do the Thanksgiving thing myself, which drives my sister nuts. She's like, how can you not do Thanksgiving? It's like, you got too many people in your house, or else I would come over. because I don't really do Thanksgiving, I can spend Thanksgiving writing. So it's one of those, yeah, there are a lot of obstacles for NaNoWriMo, for normal people. And when abnormal people start talking to me, I'm like, really? I don't have that frame of reference. And then when normal people talk to me, it's like, I don't have that frame of reference either. Because I'm babbling now. Sorry. But yeah.
Now, I don't have a job. I don't work outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that the only time I could really write was when TC was at work. Because it was hard to write when he was home, because I do kind of basically take care of him and stuff like that, you know, because he's my husband. That's my job. So when he's home, it's harder for me to write because I'm trying to spend time with him or I'm fixing him food and stuff like that. So I found that I only had the time he was at work anyway to write. So it was like almost having a job.
Well, out of curiosity, when did he write?
At work. He wrote at work.
Oh.
Because he does night shift.
Oh, that's right. And he's got that cushy tech job thing. I say cushy.
he has to write on his own laptop, though.
Well, yeah.
He was hoping to be able to write on the work ones, and then I believe at the end of October, they upgraded all the systems so that you can't have a USB key, use a USB key on him.
Oh, that sucks.
Since he works for a health insurance company,
right. It's
so people don't, like, take the people's health records and stuff.
That makes sense. So, Mr. Wendigo, Mr. Denizen, is the satisfactory question kind of painful for you at this point?
For me, it is, at least. I mean, I have to be honest. I am pretty disappointed in the my faux word count. And, yeah, building a house is a pretty bad excuse. And I'd probably need another 5 or 10 minutes to thoroughly explain why building a house caused my word count to be so low. So I'm not going to get into that here. I am disappointed, but, and I'll say this again, at least I got the thing started. That much I am proud of. So.
So at least there's a little bit of satisfaction in there for you.
A little bit, yeah.
And you're going to be writing on it this entire year. How about next November? Are you going to be with us again, or are you going to be building a house again still?
No. The house is actually nearly finished.
Oh, nice.
I am planning to do NaNoWriMo 010. Partly because I feel like I need to redeem myself from this year.
So you need the loud hosannas singing your praises after an epic fail?
Oh, she who sins, you are funny.
Terry says that he'll be doing Nahow Buildmo.
Oh, God, I hope I'm not still building a house this time next year. That would be painful.
Well, didn't you tell us in October that you've been building this house for like 10 years?
I did.
Jeez. Sorry, it's just that I cannot fathom 50,000 nails in a month.
No. You know, you may not be too far off.
All right. Well, I'm holding you to your loud hosannas, singing your praises next year.
All right.
And Mr. Wendigo.
Yes.
Should I even ask?
Well, I actually learned something. I learned that taking the story where I took it from last year, so I was doing a whole sequel of the crazy biker guys and the guy that was all like, I'm a kid, but I can control the dead. I took it a completely bad direction. So I learned that chapter, mini chapter or whatever, should never have happened. I'm striking it from the canon of my little world, and probably will rehash some of it at some point in a different way. Because I picked up like 3 years after, and it just didn't work out. So it kind of bites to a head. I had a really, really hot like three-way lesbian scene worked up, possibly with another kid. A guy popped in like, "Hey, what's up, ladies?" But yeah, and it was
up. It's not appropriate.
Exactly. I'm writing along, and I'm like, this really needs a hot like lesbian three-way. I'm like, look, that has nothing to do with your plot, dude. No, seriously, hear me out, dude. Get off my shoulder, Squidward. So I sent Alex home, and I kept writing, and
You're so naughty.
Hey, I did learn that you can take a story where it never really needs to go, and not that I wrote a lick of that's a horrible pun a lick of porn, not that I wrote a sentence of anything vaguely pornographic. I think the most romantic any of my characters got was a kiss. And, it's only 8,000 words, so. But, yeah. We're not to take place. We're not to take people. That would be putting your two main characters thousands of miles apart with no possible way of getting in touch with each other. Yeah. Dumb idea.
Okay.
But now I know for next year.
So, was there anything about this year's NaNoWriMo that you were satisfied with on a personal level, or just...
There was one passage I wrote. The guy who, that's really sad when you get inspired by real life events and pet stores. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but we're at one pet store. I was going to buy a specific kind of gecko. And when they're wild caught and not bred, by people stateside, and they're caught like out of the wild, they're very angry and they're very bitey. And this thing bit me like 6 or 7 times and took off, and they actually lost it for a week in the store. Tokyo geckos. If you ever want to get one, get them captive bred. Anyways, not wild caught bred. Anyways, so I'm like, okay, that'd be great. That's the whole, there's my were-gecko. Hooray. There's one passage where the dude wakes up on the ceiling. He doesn't realize he's on the ceiling. He just realizes his pillow is somewhere, and he had a weird dream where he was chasing bugs and eating them, and he had something in his mouth, and he's kind of, moving his tongue around, and he spits into his hand, and there's a bug leg, and then the glob of bug leg and loogie drips off of his hand, past his face, and onto the dining room table.
Oh, cool.
He'd been sleeping on the ceiling. Yeah, it was pretty, pretty slick how I wrote. I was actually kind of impressed with myself. I patted myself on the back. Yes, it was very puke-worthy, Rachel. I'm sorry. But he's kind of like, whoa, cool, so I can... You're just kind of starting to realize the wonders of being a were-gecko or some sort of crazy lizard lycanthropy. So that was kind of impressive. I was like, ooh, I must keep doing that. That's fun to write. The bikers, that was nice. I always like writing up those two characters because they're just goofballs. It's like Laurel and Hardy with magic and obscenely oversized weapons.
And these were the bikers where the one guy ate the Snickers bar last year?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can beat me up later for that being what I remember of your excerpt. I'm sorry. I like chocolate.
That was his whole shtick, and he loved Snickers. He was him and his little buddy, who was actually the boss. I enjoy reading them. I went back to writing the kid who has the magical ability to raise the dead as zombies. So that really fell through. I didn't like that. So I put him in freaking Sweden. I don't know why. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. Oh, well. And introduced a whole new subplot with a new girlfriend in it. lay them. So.
So at one point I heard you use the phrase, you'll know for next year, so I'm going to guess this means you are coming back for NaNoWriMo 2010 and your eighth attempt.
Yes, looking for win number 4 out of 8, which will give you 50%, which is a failure of no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I'm going to see if I can't convince someone to join into depravity with me, because it's kind of hard to sit down and write when someone says, hey, you know, we could go get bacon. Not that I'm blaming her, as she's glaring at me, daggers across the room.
Oh, I don't imagine, I don't doubt that, because you're like, blamable. No, wait.
I know. It's like, hey, let's get bacon. Okay, cool.
Well, okay.
Should we be writing?
The whole thing is, the whole thing is that, you know, you don't have to eat bacon. No, you can write bacon.
Oh, I am getting the nastiest freaking looks right now. I words cannot describe.
And well deserved, I'm
but
sure.
But no, it's exactly. It's I'm not trying to blame Yodi at all. But it would probably make things easier for next year if I could hornswoggle her into doing it.
Hey, you know what? How about this? How about next year?
What'd she say?
I would rather not repeat that.
Okay.
But I like Rachel. He blames his loss on rare geckos and bacon. He is very creative. Yes. I play bacon, man. It's too good. It distracts me. Bacon.
All right. And I referenced Wendigo's excerpted from last year, and I'm using that reference as in words. Use them. I'm using that as a segue into asking, did anybody bring an excerpt to read for us?
Yes, I have part. I have my whole story up in front of me.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat as Samantha. I have it all up in front of me. I have no idea about an excerpt.
Okay. Who would like to read an excerpt? Anybody?
Oh. I could do my part where I blame Terry.
Yes, I want to hear how you blamed Terry.
Since I did have that in... I did actually see that part where she challenged everyone to blame her, so I did.
I never did manage to do that. I figure blaming her in reality is good enough for me.
And luckily I blamed her right at the beginning of the story, too. So
nice.
I think I'll start at the beginning and read up to that part.
Okay, so what everyone is about to hear is copyright 2009 from Miss Samantha.
Okay. After getting Allison settled in, Rebecca scoured the paper for a job. When she couldn't find a suitable job in journalism, she decided that applying in person downtown might just do the trick and help her get her foot in the door. Allison was scheduled to start school the next day, and Rebecca was really hoping to have a job by then, so she went hunting out her mother. Her mother wasn't difficult to find since this new house was so small. Rebecca asked, Mama, could you watch Allison for me for a little while? I want to head downtown and see if I can get a job at the paper. Sure, sweetie, Beatrix responded. I'm just trying to organize our kitchen here to make it easier for us to fix dinners in the future. Your father has his nose stuck in a book again, and I think little Allison went to join him. So go downtown. Nothing to worry about here. We've got it all under control. And sweetie, Beatrix said, looking at her daughter seriously, try to have some fun while you are down there too. I will, Mama, Rebecca said softly. I love you. Thank you so much for always standing by me. Beatrix smiled softly at her daughter. Rebecca turned and left to call a cab to take her to the paper's main office. She was so thankful that one of the services this community provided was free transportation. She was also led to believe that carpools to work were provided for all residents. Once the cab arrived, she asked the driver to take her to the paper. She went into the building and applied for a position as the yearbook club supervisor for the local high school. They gave her a quick interview, and once learning she was one of the new residents of Seasonton, they were more than happy to offer her the position. Smiling in triumph, Rebecca left the building and decided to take a walk to the nearby park since it was such a nice day out. While walking, she reflected on her past and what her future could hold. She would love to one day marry and have more kids, but she saw herself as damaged goods. She was an unwed mother after all. She didn't regret her past, not really. She wouldn't give up her daughter for anything. Being burned the way she had been, though, made her cautious. She thought that most guys must be like Jonathan, her father being an exception rather than the rule. She was still deep in thought when she was suddenly knocked off her feet and into someone's arms by a rampaging woman that she recognized as Terry Summer. She'd only met Terry briefly when she moved in, but could tell she was on the warpath about something. It was then that she realized she was being cradled in a pair of strong arms. It had been many years since Rebecca had been in the arms of a man, and now she was again, and it was all Terry's fault. Groaning at her predicament, she looked up into the most breathtaking pair of green eyes she'd ever seen. As her focus pulled back from his eyes, she realized they were set in a very handsome face. The man was smiling down at her, and there was a twinkle in his eyes as he realized just how unbalanced he made Rebecca feel. Straightening quickly, Rebecca brushed his hands off of her. She smiled at him nervously. "Excuse me," she said softly, attempting to avoid his eyes. "I seem to have been knocked over. Thank you for catching me." "My pleasure," a deep voice answered. "Anything I can do to help a damsel in distress?" "Well, I didn't mean to cause any trouble if I did," Rebecca said nervously. "I never find it a chore to have a beautiful lady fall into my arms," he said with a smile. "The name's Remus, Remus Botticord. It's been a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Sorry, I don't think I've gotten your name." Blushing, Rebecca answered, "Rebecca Lestrange, and it's Miss." "A pleasure, Miss Lestrange," the dark stranger said, smiling broadly. "Could I buy you a coffee or something?" he said, pointing at the nearby espresso bar. "Well, I was just coming for a walk. I just got a job at the local paper and was trying to decide how my schedule would affect my daughter and my parents," and Rebecca stammered nervously. "Just coffee, no strings attached, I swear," he said, crossing his heart with his finger, and he smiled devilishly at her. "Well, okay, I guess one coffee wouldn't hurt anything," Rebecca agreed reluctantly. Rebecca couldn't believe she was in this situation. It was all Terry's fault, and she didn't know how to get out of this situation as the handsome man led her to a table and left to get their coffees. And I will end it there.
Nice. You blamed her not once, but twice. I love it.
Oh, there's a third time later on.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah.
That is really good. Oh, good Gorshin. Dev, I'm going to smack you. Wow. And this is all based on your prosperity?
Yes. With, of course, some artistic license taken into account.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of any Sims that are able to knock other Sims into yet a third Sim's arms, so yeah. But not bad.
And I actually found when I went back and looked at her memories that she hadn't gotten a job at the paper with her first job. That was like later on in the week, I guess, she got the paper job.
Cool.
But that's fine. It's artistic licenses.
That's fine.
Capable. Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you so much for reading your... What's your novel titled, anyway? Did you ever title it?
I think I titled... Let me see. Season 10 Comes to Life.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for reading from your book. That was really, really good.
Thank you.
I particularly like how Terry's to blame. Blaming Terry for the win. So, Miss Finney, did you come up with an excerpt for us yet?
Yes, I did.
All right. So what you are about to hear is copyright 2009, Miss Infinity Nevermore.
Okay. Sophie came into the dining room and was about to head into the kitchen for her daily dose of caffeinated bliss when she overheard voices. "See, I told you it'd be easier after you fell into a routine." That was Lincoln's voice. "You're right, and it's easy work." Tom's voice was as rough as ever, but she thought she could hear an edge to it. It was heartening to her to think that some of Lincoln's own hires didn't like him. "But I'm curious, why the buffet-style breakfast?" "I do not know. That is another carryover from when my mother was in charge. I'll probably end that practice soon. They only need enough weight on them to perform for their customer. Sophie didn't hear anything else. That was because she was seeing red. How dare he insinuate that all the people here were prostitutes? She seemed to lose control of her body, watching her face contort into rage, her legs propelling her body into the kitchen, and her white-knuckled fist swinging a perfect arc toward Lincoln's face. However, she didn't hear or feel the satisfying crunch of bone cracking or even the slap of contact. Instead, she felt a constrained pressure on her wrist. It jolted her back into her body, where she found she had not managed to hurt Lincoln for his ugly comment. In its place was Lincoln with slightly widened eyes, and Tom frantically trying to contain her as she kicked and screamed, trying to make some sort of painful connection with the man in front of her. "Let me go," she hissed. Tom grunted with the force of trying to hold her back. "Sorry, but you got to calm down first." Sophie said, "No, he's got to get kicked in the balls first. I hate to break it to you, but it can't be now, and it can't be you." "If not me, who? And if not now, when?" Lee announced her presence by reciting a slightly modified quote. "Don't worry, Sophie, you'll get your chance," she said as she grabbed a mug and filled it with coffee as if she was only interrupting a conversation. Sophie sullenly stopped fighting Tom and let her body deflate until she was half on the floor, looking up at Lincoln with angry eyes and wild hair. His momentary fear was replaced now with amusement. Tom thought of telling him that she wasn't going to forget and Karma would probably come back to bite him. But he figured if Lincoln had survived this long with the number of women that wanted his head, he must be armed. Lincoln turned to leave. "I will speak further with you later, Mr. Franklin. Ms. Washington? Ms. Reynolds?" He nodded to each of them in turn and then left. Sophie, still quite angry, lunged at the door only to be grabbed again. "Look, Sophie, if the man weren't my boss, I would have let you go for it. But I might be fired if I just stood back and let you wail on him. So just write that down on your list of things to do before you die. Punch out Lincoln Bates."
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Dang! I was waiting for the next part. This is good.
Short excerpt.
Very nice. And what's the title of your book?
It is very tentatively titled Societally Dead.
And this is the one about the person that's in a mental institution? No. Rehab.
Yes.
Sorry, my memory is not great.
It's okay.
And I'm taking it Lincoln is the guy that is corrupt and out to get her?
Yes.
Cool.
And of course, that little episode didn't help anything.
No, oh, I can imagine. Very nice.
Thank you.
And would anyone else like to read an excerpt at it? And yes, I know it's actually an excerpt.
Okay.
All right, so what we are about to hear is copyright 2009 Mr. Wendigo from Squirrel Cookie.
Yeah, I could probably just read everything I wrote. It's about the length of an excerpt.
Yeah, it would probably take a bit more than 5 minutes, though.
Okay. All right.
Not to mention, you get kind of nasty in your writing sometimes.
Oh, yeah, there is going to be some language here.
Okay.
No F-bombs, but I do say the brown word a few times.
Okay.
Don't you know?
You know me in the bleep, because remember I was editing last year's episode and going, "I like this, I've got all these things to bleep," and you're like, "I'm sorry." I'm like, "No, I like this, this is fun."
Oh, it's... Get some use out of that effect CD. Yay! Awesome. Okay. We fired up. The sun was sinking steadily behind the distant mountains as the two Triumph motorcycles thundered down the interstate and turned onto an off-ramp that advertised cheap, fast food. Rolling through lights that seemed to stay green for the two bikers, they crept along the main drag until they reached a Lenny's. Pulling in, the lead biker smirked at the lack of clientele at his restaurant, pleased that he and his associate could talk about the business at hand. The bikes rolled to a stop in front of the diner. After dismounting and stowing their helmets, they walked into a fairly empty establishment. A sign written in rough strokes by a Sharpie in dire need of replacing instructed their customers to seat themselves, and the two men obliged, settling into the booth furthest away from the kitchen door. The larger man set a cardboard box on the table, tapping its top and sniffing at the perforated air holes, while the other man ran slender fingers through his hair, trying to repair the damage a helmet had done to his hairstyle. His hair somewhat more presentable, the smaller biker rolled his eyes, so the giant peered inside of his jacket, then quietly petted a large lizard. "Really, Rod, why did you bring that thing in here? It's not that cold outside, and it isn't one of the saddlebags on your mount equipped for transporting your little friend?" The ogreish fellow zipped up his jacket and grumbled at his companion. calling. He gets bored in the travel enclosure. Besides, I can feed him the fruit for my pancakes. Robin loves bananas. His lips twisted into what might have been a friendly smile, were it not for the oversized canines. Chuckling, Rod blurted out, "You might even say that he goes..." A flurry of slaps to his cheek stopped in mid-sentence. "Oh, cousin, do not think for a moment I'd let you get away with such an obvious play on words. How gauche!" The big man rubbed his cheeks, his eyes beginning to glow a deep ember at his traveling partner. The smaller man gave him a wink and plucked a small banana from his friend's beard, handing it over in one fluid motion. "Call it a peace offering. To you and your diminutive friend, Robin." The troll took a fruit and ripped it in half, unzipping his jacket and holding a piece of the fruit for his pet gecko. Robin poked his head out of the biker's leathers, taking a few bites of the fruit, before retiring to the nick of his owner's arm. "We're cool, cousin, all of us." He tied the bulge in his jacket and laid a hand on the box on the table. "Well, maybe not this little What's our game plan for this guy, anyway?" "We're taking him to..." The prettier man held up a finger to his friend's lips, shaking his head sternly. "The little as you so aptly named him, can understand and comprehend every word we say. And if he knows our plans, then our element of surprise is lost." Colin leaned back in the booth, crossing his arms behind his head and smirking. "So what do we do, cousin?" The bearded giant scratched his chin and slammed a ham-sized fist onto the table. "We speak in a tongue he can't understand. Problem solved." Straighting up in his seat, Rod's voice dropped a good half of an octave as he invoked the speech of his kin, a deep and guttural tongue that could invoke ancestral memories of terror and bloodshed in any Nordic heart. "What are the odds he speaks trollish?" Wincing, the handsome biker cupped his ears and closed his eyes, groaning softly, "About the same as me belching that ridiculous language in public. My dearest and sincere apologies, my cousin, but there are depths to which I cannot even sink." Colin swept his hair back with one hand as the other rested atop the box containing the fierce reptile from the pet store. His voice took on an unearthly quality, more akin to the double-toned vocalizations of chanting Buddhist monks, though the pitch was higher and somehow airier. Melodic tones sang forth from the she's lips as he asked, "Perhaps the tongue of my people is more suited for this endeavor." Rod plugged his pinkies into his ears, humming to drown out the words of his friend. "No, I can't talk like that unless I'm really, really hammered. I can barely hear that speech without going nuts and wanting to wreck. Sorry, bro." The two men looked at each other thoughtfully, trying to solve this conundrum when a young man with a smart shirt and a shiny name tag that read Reese appeared at their booth, eyes glazed and sunken in his pickle-ridden face. "Welcome to Lemmy's. My name is Jonathan, and I'll be your server this evening. Tonight's special is our Ultra Super Mega Slantastic Play, which consists of 3 eggs, 4 strips of bacon, 2 hotcakes, and your choice of 2 pieces of French toast, 3 links of maple sausage, or freshly smashed hash browns for $6.99. Also, our soup today is Italian wedding, and we have a special on our strawberry cheesecake. It's still $3.49 a slice, but it includes unlimited refills on our world-famous coffee. Are you ready to order, or do you need a moment?"
"Hold up, Jack, you're a liar."
Rod glared at the young man as he snarled. The waiter responded by blinking slowly and coughing a little.
"You said your name is Jonathan, but your name tag says Reese. Which is it?"
"It's both. Reese is my actual first name, but after too many Reese's Peanut Butter Cups jokes in elementary school, I started going by Jonathan. My old name tag had the name I'd rather use on it, but I lost it sometime last week after pulling a double shift to cover for one of the waitresses here, who incidentally still owes me. The assistant manager ordered a new name tag for me, though our corporate office supply depot, and thought it would be funny to use my first name, not my preferred name. He went to school with my obnoxious older brother, who told him all about the constant teasing and endless bullying I went through over my name, all because my mother wanted to name me after her favorite grandfather from Wales. Would you like a minute or two to look over the menu, or would you like to order now?" I'll end it there.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, how does Reese's Pieces end up in this?
Let me fast forward, if you don't mind. I'll set it real quick. It's maybe 10 sentences. Essentially, what happens is in the box on the table is this evil were-gecko thing.
Uh-huh.
The nasty one that starts the trouble.
Yes, the little spit.
So his name is Jonathan Reese Powell. Yeah. Jonathan Reese Powell started to speak, but the next few seconds seemed to drag on for eternity. His gaze passed from the eyes of each biker and then to the box on the table. The box teetered as its occupant burst out of its paper prison, and he thought for a moment just how silly a gecko looked when standing upright on its hind legs. The green and orange lizard fell forward onto its front legs, then launched itself through the air at his face. The two bikers screamed out a warning to him, but he was distracted with just how large the lizard appeared to get as it flew toward them. He took a step back as the creature opened its massive mouth, revealing hundreds of needle-sharp teeth, teeth that would probably not result in his death, but would undoubtedly necessitate a trip to the emergency room. The young waiter took another step back, his mind trying to explain away the phenomenon that made this lizard, that not a minute ago was barely longer than a foot, somehow look at him eye to eye as it stood on its hind legs, its pale pink tongue licking its gigantic orange eye. Jonathan took another step back, marveling at the acrobatics the lizard managed as it cartwheeled towards him. He winced as the beast's tail slammed into his throat, reaching up to clutch the wound, but his hands weren't working.
He saw the ceiling as he fell back, making a mental reminder to hit it with a broom to get rid of the cobwebs. Jonathan's head hit the floor, his eyes focusing on a headless corpse in front of him. He tried to scream, wondering which of his coworkers was now spewing a geyser of blood from their neck, but he found he had no air in his lungs. Blaming it on the shock of being attacked by a giant lizard, the young man watched in horror as the lizard tore each limb off of the cadaver with each ferocious bite, making the most god-awful screeching as it fed. The murderous lizard cocked its head at him, smacking its lips as if it had them, before letting out a shrilling cry. The waiter tried to move, but found his legs weren't responding to his fight-or-flight response. The B-series vocalization was quickly overpowered by a roar from something else, and the gecko barely had time to look up before its head was caved in by a gigantic hammer. The roaring didn't cease as the hammer rose and fell, pulverizing the strange creature into a green and orange paste. Jonathan smiled a little through the haze until a hammer strike knocking the name tag of the victim into his field of vision. That explains why I can't move. So what happened was the lizard knocked his head off,
right,
and he ripped him apart.
Right.
And he was too stupid to get it.
Right. I was hoping that someone would mention the Reese's Pieces, though.
That was the next part I was going to write, but I didn't get the Reese's part.
Oh.
Yes.
You are fired.
I know. So, yeah, Reese's Pieces.
Reese's
that was going to
pieces.
Be my next thing I was going to write.
Oh, man. That was good. I like that. I'm glad I talked you into reading that last bit, too, because I'm a big fan of Blood and Guts.
It's funny that it was that or the it was either that I was gonna read or the lizard books and the spit. But I don't wanna creep Rachel out too much.
Right. That's true. Well, I had kind of prepped an excerpt of mine own, and then I realized that I mainly went the cheap route and took the excerpt from my profile on NaNoWriMo.org because nothing else is even remotely okay, meaning I suck. So I'm being told to read Bloody Bastard Read. So I'm going to read the excerpt that is on my profile page. But before I do, actually, Wendigo, I forgot to ask you, what was the title of your novel?
Sorry, fumbling for the mute button.
Okay.
The title for my novel actually had to do with the other main character and his girlfriend. It was, God, I Love Ragnarok and Roll.
Oh, so you went with that title even though you didn't use that story?
Well, I actually had started to use that story, and I wrote one little bit for it, and it was like, yeah, this blows. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I figured it was going to be a different title because that wasn't... Because blah, blah, blah. Because the story that you were relaying all throughout November was not the story that you had told us in October.
Yeah. Well, it was supposed to be kind of a two-parter that I was going to weave together, but when you're going to weave something together, you actually have to have one string meet the other string. That never happened.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I guess without further... Wow, my brain just forgot the word I was looking for. Oh, well.
Adieu.
No, I was going to... It's kind of like procrastination, kind of like delaying and putting it off, but it's a... Stalling! There we go. Without further stalling, what you're about to hear is copyright 2009 Mr. Darren Blake, although it's really not worth protecting with a copyright. It is from my novel, The Savarta. Sorry. When you're finished with your test, turn it into my desk, and then you're free to leave. Christopher Phillips nodded to himself at the teacher's words and picked up his yellow number 2 pencil, freshly sharpened, just for this test. He had studied very hard and thought he was ready for it. He'd picked up most of the material during the class discussions anyway, but there are always things he might have missed along the way. He flipped the paper over, surprised to find a single question on the page. A rustling murmur went through the classroom, telling him everyone else had received a similar shock. He glanced up at Miss Spencer and saw her suppressing her glowing smile. The question was an essay question, but it had nothing to do with the history they had been discussing all week. It was simply, what are you planning to do with your summer vacation? This wasn't the kind of last day of school test he had expected. This was more of a first day of school oral assignment. Still, if this was the question she wanted to ask, he would answer it to the best of his ability. That was what his father expected of him. so that was what he had to do. He put pencil to paper and began to write. Although he had no specific plans other than the summer camp Miss Spencer had helped him get into, he wrote for a very long time. He made a few things up because the truth wasn't something he liked to think about until it reared its drunken head. He talked about the fabulous trips he wouldn't take, the sights he wouldn't see, the pictures he wouldn't take. The only true thing in the entire essay was his hopes for making friends at this camp where no one knew him. He could become anyone he wanted to, and no one would shove him for no reason. They wouldn't flush his head in the boys' room. They wouldn't extort lunch money from him in a protection racket they would then not follow through. And out in the woods with these other kids, he wouldn't be there. He wrote more than he knew he needed to, filling up the entire space on the page and then three quarters on the other side. He heard the kids... blah. I can read, really. He heard the other students file out of the room as they finished, but he kept writing. Leaving early would only mean going home early, and Chris really didn't want to do that. When at last he was out of things to make up, he put his pencil down. It made a sharp clack in the silence of the classroom. He slid the paper off the edge of the desk with a crisp rustle and slowly made his way to Miss Spencer's desk. Since he sat in the front row, it wasn't much of a trip. He placed the page face down atop the stack already there, his neat but still childish scrawl a stark contrast to the pristine condition of the one it replaced. When it seemed there was no other excuse to remain, he turned to retrieve his belongings and face the demon at home. Miss Spencer's voice stopped him. "Chris, wait, I need to talk to you for a second, if that's okay." He turned back to her, hoping his relief didn't show on his face. "Yes, ma'am?" She stood, coming around the desk to talk with him. She stood, coming around the desk to talk to him with no barriers between them, careful not to disturb the stack of test papers. The untidy pile was the only thing left on the surface, except for her planner, which she had been writing in while her kids took the test. Her arms folded in front of her, she leaned against the desk. "Happy to be leaving here?" she asked him in an almost conversational tone, not that of a teacher who had just asked a student to stay in the room after everyone else had been allowed to leave. "Well, no, not really," he admitted. "I doubt junior high is going to be any better for me than grade school was." He suppressed a shudder at the thought of how much more cruel the next level of schoolmates was bound to be. Miss Spencer nodded sympathetically. "I guess it's not easy being in your situation." "My situation?" he asked, his hackles suddenly raised by her phrasing. She couldn't possibly know about... "Bullied," she explained. "I'm a teacher, Chris. I notice things. Just today, Jack shoved you from behind and you nearly lost your grip on the stack of books you were bringing back here." She leaned forward and said in a conspiratorial whisper, "Between you and me, he got an actual essay question on the significance of the Boston Tea Party and how it led to the revolution." She straightened back up. "I don't like bullies." "Neither do I," he agreed, then thought of something. "Miss Spencer, why did you get me into that summer camp anyway?" "Let's just say I think this camp will change your life," she answered, mysteriously. "With the right skills and... blah. With the right skill set in place, you're going to make a great ruler one day." Ruler? What the heck was she talking about? This was the United States in the 21st century. Rulers were people who lived across the ocean, and a good number of them were really nothing more than figureheads. "Suffice it to say that I think you'll finally find the place you belong," she continued. "You'll make new friends, and you'll share something with them that no one will ever be able to take away from you." She leaned forward again. "And I do mean no one." Chris still had no idea what she was talking about, but he nodded. "Okay," was all he could think to say. Miss Spencer smiled at him. "Believe me when I tell you that I wish I could fully explain what I'm saying, but you would never be able to understand it right now. And when you're able to understand, I won't be able to say anything. This is going to be my only chance to..." She couldn't seem to find the words. A feeling started in the pit of his stomach, not entirely unlike the feeling he usually got before one of the troll patrol rounded a corner and grabbed him by the collar to throw him around in the hallway or yank him into the boys' room. Something was going on here, something not entirely on the up and up, but not something overtly dangerous, at least not yet. She was trying hard not to tell him something he needed to know, but he had no idea what. And whatever it was, she thought it was important that he be aware, if not fully informed. "May I go?" he asked, his voice shaking the same way it did around the troll patrol. "Of course," she replied, shaking herself out of some kind of internal debate. "I'm sorry, yes, you may go. Have a wonderful summer, Chris." "You too, Miss Spencer," he called back at... that was a call, sure. "You too, Miss Spencer," he called back as he left her classroom. "Maybe I'll see you around town." As he left her line of sight, he put his back to the wall just outside her door and exhaled. What, relief? No, not that exactly. but he had to admit to himself that he was glad to be away from her piercing gaze. Miss Spencer was a nice teacher, but when she looked at him, sometimes it seemed that she wasn't looking at him, but some version of him only she could see. She'd been getting that look when she called him a ruler, and it was definitely beginning to freak him out. And in the classroom, he heard her say softly, probably not realizing he could still hear her, "A kind and just ruler some day." That was all he needed to hear to know it was time to go home. If things were this weird at school, it was bound to be bad at home. And as you may or may not know, that scene really has a whole lot of nothing to do with the actual plot of the story. But, blah. Yeah, this thing is never going to see the light of day. I may or may not finish it. I intend to finish the first book of this supposed series, but I'm never going to do anything with it, so. Yeah. Does anyone else want to read an excerpt? I know that Terry had said she doesn't, so we won't try to force her, but we still got Mr. Denizen to hear from.
Let me see. I did read an excerpt. It wouldn't be much. let's see. If I could, up again.
You don't have to if you don't want to, but if you do want to, feel free.
I've been considering it, honestly. Okay, here we go.
All right, what you're about to hear is copyright 2009, Mr. Denizen.
All right. It was the end of July. It had been a long, hot summer on his parents' farm, and two events in his near future consumed his thoughts, the cooler weather of fall and the start of his first year in college. The stellar academic record he had built up ensured him acceptance into all the schools he had applied to, but his low-income status restricted his choices. He ended up choosing a local university. Well, not expected, but it would be easier on his wallet. Along with low in-state tuition, a healthy list of scholarships and grants would more than pay for his first 2 years, at least. Already, Josh had done a lot of preparatory shopping. Clothes, room decor, writing supplies. Today, however, his dad and he were going to buy his very first computer. No one needed to tell Josh that computers were a big deal. In the last decade, computers had gone from useful tools to nearly essential. Josh was first exposed to computers when he started school, so he had an idea of the things they could do. Write letters and stories, play games, tell time, even calculate several complicated math problems all at once, which, to a six-year-old, included adding two-digit numbers together. As time went on, he saw people using them to access a seemingly magic place known as the Internet, and do such wonderful things as checking emails, online shopping, and watching the YouTube. Joshua became more fascinated with computers the more he was around them. Single-unit desktops, desktops with huge monitors, laptops, desktops with flat monitors, Macs, PCs. Josh had seen and touched them all. And the innovation that came along, CD burners and flat screen monitors, to wireless connectivity and high-definition DVD burners. Even stronger than his love of computers, however, was his desire to own one himself. His family had never owned a computer. They didn't have much need or want for one. Josh's dad even considered them a waste of time, an evil machine that sucked the drive right out of people and turned them into lazy freeloaders. He was proud of what his son had accomplished, though, and his pride was enough to override his loathe of the technology that, he had to admit, his son would need to start a successful career. Father and son had left early that morning to drive into town. They were headed for the electronics store where Josh's computer would be waiting for him. In his mind, no one could be any more excited than Josh was right now. He sang a happy song in his head the whole way there. Going into the city was a rare occurrence. They only went when they needed something their farm couldn't provide. But this trip was extra special. Before he knew it, they had reached the big city. As always, Josh peered out the window in awe. He didn't get to see buildings like this very often. Even though he was 18, he was as wide-eyed as a five-year-old. This was nothing like his country upbringing. There were roads and cars and people everywhere. There were trees, too, just like in the country, but they were small and lined in rows along streets, planted by man and not by nature. Suddenly, his eyes caught something that left him puzzled. A pair of men were walking at a hurried pace down the sidewalk. They were definitely businessmen, and they both had on expensive-looking suits, but it was the younger-looking of the two that really drew Josh's attention. He seemed to have some kind of large appendages coming out of the side of his head, where his ears should be. They were the same color as his suit, and they pointed outward and slightly upward. Josh's Josh's ears managed to pick up some of what they were saying. The older-looking businessman asked the other something about profit reports as he looked at something on his phone. The younger sounded almost robotic and very serious. People don't usually look like that, Josh thought to himself. Could it have something to do with the funny earpieces he was wearing? After noticing this, Josh started to look around and noticed that the earpiece businessman wasn't alone in the big city. There were similar people everywhere, and not just businessmen. There was a lady working at a storefront who had red and white earpieces shaped a little differently. Up in a window, he saw a maid airing out a small rug. Her earpieces matched her green shirt. He even saw a man carrying a small boy on his shoulder like a parrot. And true enough, the boy had those strange things on the sides of his head. Except on the boy, one of them was open, and there was a wire coming out of it. Now Josh's mind raced as he followed the wire back to the man that was carrying him. On the other end of the wire was a pair of headphones, and the man was bobbing his head. He must be listening to music. The more he looked around, the more he saw these strange-eared people. The more his brain filled with questions as to who or what they were. By the time Josh and his dad reached the electronics store, all the questions in Josh's brain were starting to make his head hurt. He gave his head a little shake to try to force himself to stop thinking of them, at least for now. The time had arrived. His heart raced as he walked through the sliding double doors. And that's all I have. That's the end of my writing.
Huh. Okay, am I just dense, or are those earpieces not something normal?
No, they're not something normal.
Okay.
They're actually a very important part of the story, in that they are actually the, I don't know if I actually said this in the last podcast, but these people with the weird ears are actually the computers.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What's supposed to happen after that, after I've stopped at the point where I've written, what happens after that is Josh, the main character, not me, I swear. I said this was heavily based on my own personal experiences, and really the only way the story works in my head is if the main character has my name, so that's how I wrote it.
Okay.
What happens is Josh goes in the store, he's about to pick out a computer, and then he sees one model that they have on display, which is this computer that's supposed to look like a person with these earpieces, and it just absolutely floors him, and he decides that's what he wants, and that's what he ends up with. And the story continues from there.
Neat. And mm-hmm. I have to side with his father's opinion that computers make people lazy, because I've gotten even lazier since I've started using computers on a regular basis. So, yeah. True, Dev. Dev had said, that's true, but they are essential to his laziness. Sorry. That's going to be an interesting story, I think. Is there... You probably told us this in October. Is there something particular about the computers that is menacing, or... Just, is this about, what's it about?
not anything about them really that's particularly menacing. It's more a chronicling of the experiences that Josh has with his computer throughout the time that he has it.
There's
going to be a point in the story where viruses are involved, computer viruses. There's a point where... the computer kind of goes haywire and starts to do its own thing, separate from the virus incident. There's a part of the story where the computer starts to become outdated, and so Josh wants to get it upgraded, which is actually the most recent thing I've done with my computer. I've completely rebuilt it from the bottom up, because the one I had was about 5 years old, and so I've replaced pretty much every component of it. It's a complete my own build of everything, and it's actually running really well. I spent about 2 weeks building the thing and fiddling with it, trying to figure out, trying to get it up and running, and it's it's been working fabulously, and I'm quite proud of the job I've done.
Cool. Hopefully you will keep us updated on your progress as you continue.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Okay. Did I have any... Oh! Wow. I'm looking at our time and going, there's something else I need to do ask, but I don't want to go over the time. Did anyone here go to your TGIO party? The thank goodness it's over party.
I don't think we had one.
Too far out of my way, unfortunately.
Oh. Say that out loud, Terry.
This is my TGIO.
That's a sad statement for you.
Yeah, this year what was different was I didn't go to a lot of the write-ins. I went last year to almost every one that they offered, including the TGIO. But this year I went to the kickoff party, and then I just kind of stayed at home all month.
Well, I went to mine, too. And, by the way, Finny, I am...
Yes?
I am very glad that you had me postpone this episode until tonight, because had it been last night, I was... or not last night. Ha! Last week. I was kind of sick. I was not feeling well.
Yeah, I was sick, too.
So thank you for making me do it this week instead of last week.
No problem. And... it was better for both of us involved, so awesome.
Yes. All right. Does anyone have any closing thoughts about NaNoWriMo?
I will say that I found the parts I found easiest to write are the parts that will never be in my blog. because they're adult orientated.
Oh, and your blog is not adult friendly?
No, I don't want it to be adult friendly.
Okay.
I could make it adult friendly, but I don't want to. So those parts of the story will never actually see the story in the blog. But when I'd sit down to write one of those scenes, I'd easily get 4,000 words.
Okay. I could see that happening. Wendigo says porn is easy to write. Yes, but the question is it easy to write well? Because you had mentioned Squidlord's other website, and from what I understand, that is a website/podcast dedicated to porn not written well. Anyone else have anything to say about NaNoWriMo, their experiences this year? Does someone remember a question that I missed?
I do have a random, really random question.
Okay.
Who has gotten their gifts? Their presents to themselves for completing NaNoWriMo yet? Or making whatever goals that they wanted?
You know, I didn't buy myself anything specifically for NaNoWriMo. I had...
Well, I know everybody said they were going to do something for themselves. Not necessarily buy themselves anything, but...
Yeah, well, see, I had something in mind to give myself if I hit 100,000 words. And because I didn't even try to go looking for it.
Right.
I was going to go to Olive Garden, and I haven't done that yet, but I'm also planning on getting myself a new iPod. So I'll be ordering that sometime soon.
Nice. And blah, blah, blah. TC is going to get to go to his place too?
Yeah, Sweet Tomatoes. Yes, he'll get to go there soon. I don't know when we're going to be able to go because... we need to kind of figure out what we're going to do with the two newest additions to our family before we can go anyplace for a long period of time.
Right. And Finny, since you brought up the question, what are you going to... have you done anything for yourself for winning?
I honestly forgot what I was going to do if I won. I remember my treat to myself if I actually made my 60K was to go get that Cold Stone. And I haven't gotten my cold stone. But that's okay because I have eggnog ice cream. So.
Me too. I've got some in my freezer and it's really, really good and I like it. Okay, Terry, are you done rolling on the floor?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what I said. I think I said I was going to get Netflix again. And I'm actually going to get that all set up again tomorrow.
Oh, and when you do, make sure to get the Netflix Watch Instant disc for the PlayStation 3 so that you can watch your Lost Season 5 on Netflix. Instant watch on your TV.
Very cool.
All 5 seasons of Lost are currently available for streaming on Instant Watch. I think we're about ready to wrap this up, I guess. So without further ado, I think I am going to drop the mute wall upon all of your heads.
No.
No. No. No.
Okay, that was an awesome chorus. Y'all just need to take it on the road. Seriously, get out of here now. No, kidding. Totally kidding. That was good. I know there's something that I am totally forgetting to say, and I, at this point, don't care.
Hi, I'm Flick Guy.
And I'm Lazy T.
And we want you to listen to a podcast.
Yeah, you're not going to get anything out of it.
It's called Spoiler Alert.
Spoiler Alert! Spoiler Alert!
Each episode, we will review a movie so in-depth that you will walk away from it knowing more than you ever wanted to know. So be warned, if you haven't seen the movie, you will be spoiled.
If you want really technical information about a movie,
go somewhere else.
That's it, because we ain't got it, kids.
You can find Spoiler Alert in iTunes or at talkshoe.com/TC/11811.
Go there.
That's going to do it for this episode of Flickabrac Unscripted. Thank you all very, very much for showing up and talking to us and sharing your NaNoWriMo experience for 2009 with us. I'm going to go through the list in somewhat alphabetical order, and that's going to be Samantha, alphabetical from username in the chat room, for the record. And Infinity Nevermore, that's Finny for the record. Finny, you suck. And Terry, and Mr. Denizen, and Mr. Wendigo. And I'm also going to thank the text chat participants, who included Mr. Dev, and Miss Andrea, and Mr. Logan, and my friend from California, Lurawan, and Miss Rachel, because Rachel loves sexy tractors.
That's not appropriate.
I don't care. And now she's cursing me. It's awesome. Okay, brief update on what's been going on. The same old crap is getting in the way of the same old crap. I have released one more episode of Spoiler Alert since the last episode of Unscripted. Meh. But I'm really close to setting an arbitrary I'm coming back no matter what date, because I'm finding myself procrastinating way too much. So stay tuned to the Plurk and Twitter feeds for any and all announcements regarding that. We lost our phone number because this vacation that I was talking about made me forget to call the listener line an extra time, but I have a new phone number that is not yet ready to accept phone calls because I haven't called and set up the "Hey, this is Flick, bite me" type message. But I will get that going when I get that going. And there's probably something else. Anyway, if you need to leave feedback or send me a nudge saying, "Flick, this show sucks," flickabrack@gmail.com. Follow us on Twirt. Follow us on Plurk or Twitter, Flickabrack, in both places. You know, I'm not really doing my closing because I have no notes, and this is an unscripted episode anyway, so bite me. I am Darren Blake, and I will see you at some point, sometime in the future. Bye.
Flickabrack thanks the Podsafe Music Network for providing all of the music you have heard in this podcast. Assimilate their music at music.podshow.com.